Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, saladi karup, guten tag, ja vivi va kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection prison, military industrial corporation in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy, unchallenged by mediocrity, or bias for that matter, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. What are we? Oh, we're starting about 24 hours late. We're on Sundays, live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Hippie standard time, which means give or take a day or two, one way or the other. You know, it's the Russian hackers are messing with our equipment. That's what's happening. So here we are. We're doing the show live Monday, the day after Sunday. Kind of unusual for us to be doing that. By the way, now I kind of see why KRLA in Los Angeles preempted me for a few weeks right after 9/11, worried about what I might say. I'm in one of those stages again, where maybe I can blame the car accident from a few weeks ago. That I'm still a bit out of focus, so I apologize in advance for anything I say or don't say today. There, let me get that disclaimer out of the way, because I know how they felt way back then. Just after 9/11, they were worried I might say, probably something like, well, every day is 9/11 for the animals, or something like, as many Americans are killed every day by meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption as died on 9/11, or meat, dairy, eggs, fish consumption kills more Americans than all wars combined. So I can see why they might have wanted me to watch what I might say. And I feel like the world is in one of those strange places again. Actually, I just don't really know what to say. I'm speechless. And that's not really a good thing if you're hosting a radio program. I suppose I could just say go vegan for the next couple of hours on air, huh? That would be more of a service to the world than what you get from the corporate establishment media. Go vegan, go vegan, go vegan, go vegan. Can you handle it for a couple of hours? I don't know. Well, too bad. Too bad this is only radio. Only audio. Then I wouldn't have to think of something to say. I could at least, I could do a food demonstration on camera. I could take a blender or some food processor. I could make borscht, right? I could make beet soup, a very delicious soup, or a very tasty chilled beverage, I might add. But if I were to do that, I would be accused of being a Russian operative. Mr. Linden, is it true that you drank vodka in the past? Well, yes. Aha! Russian operative. No, I just left the potatoes in the cabinet too long, and, eventually. Anyway, so I am also, I might say, sympathetic to other Russians, Julian Assange and Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning, all very good Russians, I do believe. Yes, I'm a Russian sympathizer, it seems. That's what I don't know how it happened, but here I am. A Russian sympathizer. But actually, no, I was born in the USA, you know, born in the USA. And, you know, I can tell what's American. I can spot what's American and what's not, you know. So, I just wanted to take a moment, actually, to thank Russia today for being, well, really more American than America is. You know, America now feels that it is un-American for Americans to know anything about their government and politicians. That's very un-American. Say today, we'll risk war. It would actually risk nuclear war to defend Americans from knowing anything. And as we saw in the Podesta WikiLeaks, unaware and compliant citizenry, that is what they want. That's their goal, an unaware and compliant citizenry. So actually, I would like to hear that at your next Hillary rally. That would be a great chant, wouldn't it? That would be a great chant for everybody, okay? What do we want, an unaware and compliant citizenry? When do we want it? Right after the election. I guess the 8 people who show up at a Hillary event could do that cheer, huh? Yeah. And Bill fell asleep during the Democrat convention, right? Fell asleep. So a nice cheer like that could wake him up. And so I don't know. Just for the purpose of documentation here, I don't know how. I think, well, you know, I want to be the happening show in the media, you know. So great, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on air for 16 years now. But, you know, the consultants are telling us you got to be happening, hip, you know, with the kids today. So, just seeing very I was going to have Cindy Sheehan on today's program, and she's just texting me that her dog got out and she found her dog and he's very sick. So okay, sorry to report Cindy Sheehan won't be on today's program. I wanted to talk to her about her perspective on life in general right now. Cindy Sheehan, who lost her son in the Iraq war and gained global attention from setting up Camp Casey outside the Bush family compound in Crawford, Texas. And Cindy has run for Congress in the past. She ran for vice president. So, gosh, I hope her dog's doing well. Or does better. So anyway, so I'm thinking, well, let's be WikiLeaks today. Shouldn't there be a daily WikiLeaks report? Isn't that how Nightline started all those years ago with the hostages in Iran? So you know, if we did a daily WikiLeaks show, we would be happening. Anyway, I just think since the media are so compromised, and maybe the truth will never be exposed. So maybe just for the purpose of documentation here, sorry, but get into the WikiLeaks a little bit here for the purpose of documentation. And by the way, just you know, so people know, after the nuclear war happens with Russia, because Hillary wants to start a nuclear war with Russia, so, because we're blaming Russia for exposing, you know, we're blaming Russia for the WikiLeaks that tell us about Hillary. So she doesn't want us to know, so she'll start a war with Russia. And so I'm just doing this for, you know, when somebody, the two survivors who come back and they're looking for any documentation of intelligent life on Earth. And, of course, they'll look at people and say, wait a second, they were eating flesh and blood. They were eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. You know, was there ever any intelligent life on Earth? Look, these herbivores were doing the wrong thing. They went crazy and look, nuclear war. Okay. So anyway, just for the purpose of documentation, it could have been different, but, you know, let's just notice that we did have election fraud. Yes. I mean, there's no doubt. Come on. We know it. There was election fraud. Bernie won. But anyway, so we'd know about the election fraud if we were not a totalitarian dictatorship funded by foreign governments, to actually act in opposition to the interests of American citizens. Bernie Sanders, actually, if you get right down to it, I'm sure he won the primaries. He should be the nominee. If you look at it, Bernie won fair and square. Hillary won unfairly and not squarely, maybe parallelogramly. So in WikiLeaks, we see her campaign chair, John Podesta, acknowledging that Hillary often speaks untruthfully. Surprise, surprise. Hillary acknowledges that herself. In the WikiLeaks, she says that she has public positions on issues and she has private positions on issues. This is amazing, isn't it? So who is hearing the truth? Those to whom she speaks in public or those to whom she speaks in private? We learned from WikiLeaks that behind closed doors with Labor, her audience, contrary to her public position, Hillary supports fracking. Well, is that a surprise? She has already spread fracking all over the world, but behind closed doors, she's for fracking. When she talks to you, what the frack, right? What does she say about environmentalists? Well, apparently, we are all environmental extremists. And she says to environmentalists, get a life. Get a life. That's the real Hillary. Well, the Hillary, you know, in private. In public, she's, hey, we have to address climate change. Fracking's bad. Vote for me. So Hillary wants you to get a life if you're an environmentalist. So everybody, okay, there you go. Apparently, everybody's lying about everything, you know, everybody's lying. Government or gov-environment, government, politicians, corporations, media, everybody's lying. We see in WikiLeaks, sorry, I don't know if it's maybe the power of suggestion, but the more I say WikiLeaks, the more I say WikiLeaks, the more it makes me want to, like, I need a, you know, restroom break, you know, for like, where's the urinal? Where's the next rest stop? I got to take a WikiLeaks. Even Uma Abedin is shown in the WikiLeaks leaks to be lying. Well, Daisy tells the truth, right? Daisy, you tell the truth. So Uma Abedin is lying to Hillary about canceling a big money talk. Daisy. Canceling a big money talk by WJC, that is William Jefferson Clinton, who was to talk to Morgan Stanley right at the time that Hillary was announcing her candidacy. So the campaign wanted the speech canceled because it would look bad. Hillary didn't want it canceled because, bling, bling ka-ching, bling ka-ching. So Uma had to lie to Hillary to get her to change her mind after, as noted in WikiLeaks, a cooling off period. Hillary needed a, you know, a multimillionaire Hillary needs a cooling off period. You know, if you know, political correctness forces her husband to cancel a speech costing, you know, them a few hundred thousand dollars in the pocketbook, which probably, you know, just pennies to them anyway. So everyone's lying. Just give me some truth, huh? As John Lennon used to sing. It seems to me that going vegan is the only truth that remains amidst it all here. If you want to fight the corrupt, deceitful, criminal power, you know, that wants you unaware and compliant, that is what your gov environment wants of you. In the WikiLeaks, we want you to be unaware and compliant. So anyway, what can I tell you here? Just give me some truth. Just give me some truth. You know, if you don't get some truth, you become unaware and compliant and not even know it, you know? I mean, they're over there telling people not to read the WikiLeaks. They're saying, these are the announcements they're making. Don't read the WikiLeaks emails or share them. You may be committing a federal crime, right? So they're scaring people away from actually reading the WikiLeaks, which, I mean, that's really a good one, huh? Right? Watch the FBI with Comey the clown prosecute someone for retweeting a WikiLeaks leak, right? Wouldn't that be, right? You know, like in violation of the Espionage Act, we are going to prosecute you for retweeting a WikiLeaks leak while Hillary runs scot-free all the way to the bank. And by the way, the bank, you know, I mean, if you wrote this as fiction, it would be rejected as, you know, nobody's going to believe this. So Hillary runs all the way to the bank. What bank is it? In this case, it's HCSB. HCSB, upon whose board sat the director of the FBI, James Comey. HCSB. This is a bank with dealings with the Clinton Foundation, reported to be, clients of HCSB have dealings with the Clinton Foundation, estimated to be around $81 million. You believe this? Yep, that's the and The Guardian. The Guardian says Clinton Foundation received up to $81 million from clients of controversial HSBC Bank. Let me see if I can find this on the tablet here. So this money laundering bank, it's unbelievable. Let me see. So what's this? This is from Truth Freed Corrupt. HSBC Global Bank exec arrested. Links to Hillary, James Comey, and Loretta Lynch. Uh-huh. Okay. So it says here, let's see, Mark Johnson was arrested for conspiring to take advantage of insider information and other charges. Okay. But HSBC has been in hot water many times and paid billions of dollars to settle money laundering charges and mortgage abuse. They were also involved in a huge tax evasion scandal where HSBC enabled thousands of Americans and others, including drug traffickers, arms dealers, and wealthy power players around the world, to avoid taxes by hiding their money in a Swiss bank account that they owned. So on and on it goes. This is your friendly, good-hearted bank here, and James Comey's ties to this bank, whose clients had $81 million in dealings with the Clinton Foundation. Let's see. It says James Comey was nominated by Obama for the post on HSBC's board of directors in June 2012. What is Obama? How is the president nominating people for the board of a bank? Or let's face it, I mean, like, the board of a bank is Congress, right? The president of the bank is our president. Let's face it. Let's look at reality, right? Okay. So James Comey was nominated by Obama for a post on HSBC's board of directors in June 2012, and he was subsequently appointed to the board on March 4th, 2013. He served on the HSBC's Financial System Vulnerabilities Committee. Comey's appointment was for 3 years. However, he resigned effective September 4th, 2013, following his confirmation to serve as FBI director. So no corruption here. Is this unbelievable? This is unbelievable. And it takes a vegan radio show. I'm only doing this because the establishment corporate media are not touching the story. They're just blaming Russia. They just want a war with Russia. You know, if we start pounding the drums for war with Russia, the stock prices go way up for all of these weapons manufacturers, all of Hillary's friends, lots of profit. So it's all good. Hillary, tough talking, you know. If she can't get war with Russia, she's talking about Iran. She's talking about China. So you'll get your wars. The Hillary people will be very happy with how many wars they get, how many war mistakes. Hillary's very good at war mistakes. She's perfecting them as she goes along. So, we're marching off to the next war mistake, which is Russia. I don't know. So what can I tell you? It's really only a war mistake, for the families around America, whose mothers and fathers and sons and daughters will lose their limbs and lose their lives, like Cindy Sheehan's son lost his life in Iraq. It's not really a war mistake for Hillary because it's profitable. It's great when you can, you know, just generate millions and billions, and all you have to do, like, for the job is just say, "Oops, mistake, plain and simple, mistake, plain and simple." Where's the apology, though? Huh? A lot of good experience for Hillary, especially at war mistakes on her resume. Could you imagine getting, looking for a job and saying, "Okay, well, what's your experience in the past?" "Well, I made a mistake, and up to 2 million people died, 2 million civilians died, but it was a mistake, so hire me." "Oh, okay. All right." I guess we'll help her keep making those war mistakes. Anyway, so this war mistake with Russia is going to be a doozy, you know. And, you know, when things go kablooey, I mean, they just may be nuclear this time. So I don't know. I guess it's that I've been a peace activist from the Vietnam War. In high school, we got up and, you know, marched and closed down the Long Island Expressway. And, peace activism goes vegan. I think that was a natural progression for me. That's the evolution. If you're a peace activist, you want to be vegan and you don't want to oppress anyone, you certainly don't want to see a nuclear war. Back in the 50s in public school, we were afraid that we might be nuked by Russia. So we were told, "Okay, well, when you hear the siren, get under your desk." Okay, that's great, great protection, you know. But kablooey is music to Hillary's ears, you know. It's kablooey, ka-ching, kablooey, ka-ching. Kablooey is music to Hillary's ears. It's almost like a song, huh? Right, you know, kablooey, ka-ching. Cash register ring, kablooey, ka-ching. Just another little war mistake thing, you know. So anyway, war with Russia. Is anybody worried about that? I guess this is a vegan radio program, so I need to expound upon the truth which I will by telling you that the true basket of deplorables, if you don't know it, if you don't know it, the true basket of deplorables is the one you carry around in the supermarket filled with meat, dairy, fish, eggs, and honey. Who eats meat, dairy, fish, eggs, and honey in 2016, huh? Tell me, who eats meat, dairy, fish? Who still eats meat, dairy, fish, and eggs and honey, huh? It must be the unaware and the compliant. That's the diet of the unaware and compliant. Meat, dairy, fish, eggs, and honey. You know, whether you are eating Trump steaks or the decomposing bodies of chickens, pigs, and cows killed by Tyson Foods, the close ally of the Clintons, Hillary made her fortune with the assistance of people associated with Tyson Foods. Saw some other strange accusations about Tyson. I better research them. I better check the WikiLeaks before I talk about that. But anyway, yes, Tyson, the ones who made the Clintons rich, because the Clintons kind of looked the other way while Tyson was poisoning the drinking water in Arkansas with chicken poop. And then we're concerned about lead poisoning in Flint, Michigan, when the Clintons didn't do anything but appoint a, you know, a commission to study the problem with chicken industry people on the commission. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. What can I tell you? So in this day and age, who eats flesh and blood? Okay. Now that the WikiLeaks are out, we know it's the unaware, the compliant, the unaware who would give their children something carcinogenic. Who you know, what parent wants to poison his or her child and send him or her on the way to heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes? You know, I mean, even the World Health Organization last year came out and said that processed meat causes cancer, like directly saying, you know, like hot dogs, you know, like bacon, you know, that's the, you know, turkey roll, whatever, you know, cause cancer. Only the unaware and the compliant would feed their children meat, dairy, fish, and eggs in this day and age. So that is the true basket of deplorables. Okay? So get it right. Meat, so-called meat, dairy, fish, eggs, honey, flesh and blood. Wow, that's pretty unaware and compliant. To eat flesh and blood. Ah, okay. And I would say that these deplorables will get you long before ISIS or Al-Qaeda ever will. I'm not so sure about a Russian nuclear missile at this point. I was going to say that these deplorables would get you before a Russian nuclear missile, but hey, who knows? I'm not so sure right now. We're on the warpath, banging the drums. So are the media, the establishment corporate media, who helped us get into the Iraq war, because war is profitable, good for ratings, good for advertising revenues. Yeah. I don't know. Then again, you know, ISIS getting weaponry and funding from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia gives big donations to the Clinton Foundation. Hillary Clinton makes big weapons deals with Saudi Arabia. Those weapons go to Saudi Arabia. Do they then go to ISIS? Because the WikiLeaks say that Saudi Arabia is funding and supporting ISIS logistically. I'm just a vegan talk show host. I just want peace in the world. Peace now. Go vegan. It was Tolstoy who said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And it is deplorable that even one single animal has to suffer and die. I mean, honestly, for a deplorable diet like that, you know, for the diet of the unaware and compliant, no animal should have to suffer and die. And, but from that deplorable diet, it looks like we'll all suffer and die from climate change. Since animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions, and the only solution is a 50 to 85% population shift to veganism by 2020. So we are told by the world's top climate specialists. So forget about carbon taxes. What a ridiculous concept anyway. Figuring that that'll be a way for Wall Street to make more money. That's all. And again, alternative energy is not the solution. Only going vegan is the solution. We need a massive movement to go vegan, not to eat cage-free eggs, but to go vegan. So this program is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We've been broadcasting now for just about 16 years, as heard on the Air America Radio Network, that liberal network, that had so many people on that network who now I consider, like practically right-wing. We were the most progressive program on that liberal network, Air America. And we've also been heard on CBS and Clear Channel radio stations around the country, various networks. You can hear us on Stitcher and iTunes, and you can support this program with a tax-deductible donation, as we are an educational project of Go Vegan Radio. There is a donate button at goveganradio.com. And actually right now, I have to get some stickers printed up this week. A few people wanted them. And thank you very much to everybody who donates. So we really appreciate it. We do get support from people, tax-deductible donations that do make the program possible. You can also advertise vegan and cruelty-free products and services on the show. That's how we stay on the air. And when we're lucky, we generate the funds to organize events like the World Vegan Summit and Expo and various events that we have over the years. But apparently money is important in doing these things. And all the money right now is either, in some offshore bank account, probably with the Clinton Foundation, or the Humane Society of the United States, which is basically the Clinton Foundation of the animal rights movement. And it sucks all the money out of the movement and makes sure none of it goes toward promoting going vegan. No money toward going vegan, just cage-free eggs. So anyway, if you make a donation in the amount of the average Bernie donation at Go Vegan Radio, goveganradio.com, donate $27 or more, and you can choose the bumper sticker you want sent to you. Well, as I said, I'll print some up this week and get them out right away. And the bumper stickers are Eat Republicans, Not Animals, or Eat Democrats, Not Animals. No difference to me, so make your choice. Eat Republicans, Not Animals, or Eat Democrats, Not Animals. Choose that bumper sticker with any donation over $27. Again, thanks to everyone who donates to the program and supports us. And coming up in just a few minutes, we will be hearing from Professor Gary Francione and Professor Anna Charlton. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. On Twitter, it is at Go Vegan Radio. And on Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And there are also a couple of extraneous Bob Linden pages. They both are I. They tend to stay close to maxed out at 5,000 each. You know, I didn't start Facebook correctly initially because who wants a fan page? That's too egomaniacal. But then I didn't know they max out at 5,000. So, but I say enough things apparently to upset enough people to like not be my friends anymore. And then that makes room for new people to, for me to accept that undying friendship. I'd like to thank HealthAid Kombucha for its support of the radio program. Just a very delicious kombucha. Check your natural foods market for HealthAid. Cold-pressed, handcrafted in small batches using only the freshest organic and raw ingredients, flavored with cold-pressed juice, fermented 100% in glass, and packaged in UV-protective amber bottles. And also from HealthAid, now there are these amazing super teas, black currant, and maca root, and others. So HealthAid has created a special union of two powerful foods, natural botanical superfoods and raw organic kombucha. And a wonderful company. You can go to healthaid.com, health-ade.com. Check it out. Many delicious flavors, organic, raw, vegan, of course, and available at a natural foods market near you. I also would like to thank Vegetarian House for its ongoing support year after year after year of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Vegetarian House, one of the great vegan restaurants in all the world. It is a 100% vegan restaurant, organic, non-GMO, very, very, very delicious. You can check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us, vegetarianhouse.us, and Vegetarian House Caters. Vegetarian House is in San Jose at 520 East Santa Clara Street. And Vegetarian House also caters in the Bay Area, and the vegan catering business there is booming. So if you have a business event, you have a social event, you're getting married, the food has to be great, and you want to impress, you know, the pickiest people there, you know, who are the vegans, everyone will love the food too. The vegans and the pre-vegans, the vegans and those who are soon to be vegan, we hope the sooner the better. So vegetarianhouse.us, check out the menu. And if you have catering, a need for catering, get in touch with Vegetarian House. Thank you also to Evolution Dog and Cat Food, vegan dog and cat food. Daisy loves Evolution, and you can go to petfoodshop.com to order. Also, you can talk to Eric Weissman if your companion animals are having any health issues. He is very good for consultation, so get in touch with him, petfoodshop.com for Evolution dog and cat food. And one more thank you goes out to the Stanford Inn on the Mendocino Coast in California. The website is stanfordinn.com. It is the only vegan eco resort in America. So remember that if you're ever on Jeopardy, you know, and one of the tough questions, what's the only vegan eco resort in America? It is the Stanford Inn on the Mendocino Coast, a very special place in Northern California. Go to stanfordinn.com and you can check out the rooms. Of course, your companion animals are welcome there, and you can be as active or tranquil as you like. Go canoeing or biking, do arts and crafts, yoga, all the good things there, along with Raven's Restaurant, which is a renowned vegan restaurant. In fact, The Stanfords, Jeff and Joan, have a book out, Dining at the Ravens, with lots and lots of recipes of the delicious foods available at Ravens Restaurant at the Stanford Inn in on the Mendocino Coast in California. Okay, so we will continue. Again, I invite you to support this program with a tax-deductible donation. Everybody keeps asking you for money. You know, Democracy Now! Asks for money. NPR, PBS, everybody asks for money. This is the place that talks about veganism. So if you want to support veganism, a voice for the most important cause for the animals and for the environment and human health, donate here. The Humane Society of the United States has $200 million in the bank. They bring in about $140 million every year. And I just got a tweet from HSUS. Look, we rescued 130 animals. Fast, send an emergency donation now to HSUS. HSUS has enough money in the bank to spay and neuter every dog and cat in America. So if you want to help a grassroots nonprofit, you know, get the word out about veganism through our radio broadcast and through the events. We would like to, you know, create another World Vegan Summit and Expo, but hey, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I still owe a bit on the last one, as great as it was and successful as it was, you know. So that's where that is. So, all right, we'll continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. I wonder if anybody says the word vegan more than I do. I wonder. And I'm happy to. It's my favorite word ever. My favorite word. I can't hear it enough. I can't say it enough. I can't ask you to go vegan enough. Okay, so, what happened here? Well, we do our show normally, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sundays, Pacific time. That's when we're live, but we do it basically hippie standard time, and so it came out like a day late this time here, because we have the Russians messing with our equipment. That's the problem we're having. The Russians are playing with our Skype connections here. So anyway, we sent Hillary off to calm them down, so we're back, and we have Professor Gary Francione on the line with us, and Professor Anna Charlton, the abolitionist approach to animal rights. And how are you today, Gary and Anna?
We're fine, Bob, although we actually heard a comment on television that sort of encapsulated our feelings. They were talking about Trump and Clinton, and the commentator said, this really sad thing is that in another month, one of these people will be president. You know, it's almost like
may time pass slowly. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's really, I know. This is a very strange time.
It's a very strange time, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But this whole idea that, you know, for all of my life, we've been, you know, choosing the lesser of the two evil candidates. It's always been, you know, well, they're not great. Neither of them is great. But, you know, after Gene McCarthy, it's basically been neither of them is great, but we'll just choose the lesser of the two evils. And
voting against someone. We wind up against someone.
Exactly.
Because I used to vote for the McGoverns of the world, McGovern, John Anderson, Eugene McCarthy. I can't vote for anybody who'd ever win until I started voting against the ones who scare me too much, you know. So, yeah. But then what happens when the two evils are like too evil, you know, like T-O-O evil, to where like neither one, like, you know, it's like when neither one is acceptable, really, you know, they're too evil, too evil.
I think a lot of people feel it's exactly the situation we're in right now.
And people are really worried. You know, I think there's a national nightmare going on, and people are very concerned about what will happen. I get very concerned about war. That becomes my top issue. Apparently, I've been practicing anti-war activism and peace activism more than anything in my life, you know, since high school. And I get very worried about this talk about Russia and Iran and China that I hear from Hillary. So and then Trump says he doesn't really want to go to war with Russia. So, you know, I mean, these are the things that, you know, I have to try to balance. You know, my concern really is, but that's my, I think apparently that's one of my top issues, you know, is war and trying to stay out of it.
Yeah, well, we're heading in the wrong direction. If your concern is war, then you were heading in the wrong. Did you have Cindy Sheehan on? Was she on the first part of the show?
No, her dog got out, and she found her dog, and she texted me, and she said, "Okay, we found the dog," and then comma really sick. So I wasn't sure if the dog is really sick or she's really sick right now. But she was. She was supposed to be on, but will not be. And, you know, she paid the ultimate price. Her son was killed in the Iraq War, and she camped out outside the Bush ranch in Crawford, Texas, asking, you know, what is the noble cause? You know, I mean, it's when are we going to ask? Like, why are we going to war? Why are we risking, well, you can see what it is and how profitable arms deals are and weaponry, and that the talk of war raises the stock prices of weapons manufacturers. So I guess always follow the money to the cage-free eggs and to war. What can I tell you?
That's exactly right. You know, I saw an interesting essay by Cindy in which she said that she almost felt bad for George Bush because he had gotten such, had gotten so much criticism for getting us into wars. And Obama, basically, the Democrat, you know, all of us liberals out there were unwilling to criticize Obama when he was getting us into all sorts of problems and all sorts of war situations. And that she was saying that she felt bad that he actually had gotten a raw deal, that, you know, that Bush had been far more criticized for what he had done than Obama was for what he had done.
But when Democrats do war, it's a good war. When Democrats destroy the Constitution, it's, you know, it's for our own good. I mean, we don't rise up against Democrats, even though Hillary, how is she a Democrat anyway? The whole Bush family is supporting her, and Kissinger, and, you know, she's all tied in with, you know, that, you know, the warmongering clique of the country here. So, you know,
well, as Chris Hedges says, Bill Clinton caused the Democratic Party to become basically the Republican Party, and that caused the Republicans to go so far right that they just went, you know, they just became an insane party. But that in many ways, you know, the Democratic Party, it's like Tony Blair. Look what Tony Blair did to labor in Britain. You know, it's not a labor party anymore.
So some progressives would feel that the election of Trump, at least there could be an opposition, that people could stand up to him and protest. But when we get the same policies from Bush, from Obama, not a peep, you know? I mean, just drone bombing away, and unlimited military detention of U.S. citizens without charges. And look, you know, the heroes to progressives would be people like Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden. And yet look at our progressive government wants to arrest them and throw them in jail and throw away the key.
Exactly. No, it's a horror show. It's an absolute horror show. But, you know, look, I mean, Just yet another reason why it's a good thing not to wish you were any younger, because things are only going to get worse. But you know, look, I want to be positive. I want to be positive. You know, Anna and I spend all of our time basically, you know, that we're you know, doing vegan advocacy. And this semester, I am for the first time teaching animal ethics as an undergraduate course. I've been teaching it as a graduate, as a law course for many years. Started teaching it in the 1980s as a law course in a law school. And Anna and I ran the clinic through the 1990s, and we've been doing the animal rights, human rights class and some other animal rights classes, but always at the law school level. And this past semester, for the first time, I'm teaching it as an undergraduate course. And I've got, I think, 25, 27 kids in the class. I wanted to keep it to 15, but we got a lot of we had more students. And I cut it off at whatever it is. I guess it's 25 or 27, and which is the most I can. That's the largest class I can have and still have people engage in meaningful discussion. And I actually am very optimistic. These are undergraduates. You know, they're basically in the age range of, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. And I am overwhelmed with, you know, how eager they are. And they get it, Bob. I mean, these are people who are not, you know, they're not involved with any of these groups. They're just young people who are interested in animals. I haven't really asked them what they thought they were getting into when they signed up for the course. So I don't know really what their expectations were. I will probably ask them that at some point in the semester, because we're only about a third of the way in. But you know, I really am overwhelmed by, they get it. That, you know, they get it, and they get it, and they get excited about it, and they're eager to talk about it, and they've got all sorts of interesting ideas, and they're bright, and they're enthusiastic, and they get it. And I was saying to Anna today, you know, it is so frustrating, because we spend so much of our time dealing with animal people who don't get it, because they you know, because they're involved, and you know, the reason is always, as you said a few minutes ago, you follow the money. They're either involved with these large organizations that have an incentive to not want to understand things and to obfuscate things and to promote humane, happy exploitation, etc. Or they, you know, they're either benefiting from a confused message, or they're involved with a group that's benefiting from a confused message, and they don't get it. And we end up, you know, you and me and Anna and everybody, you know, who does view veganism as a moral baseline, we end up fighting with these people. But the reality is that sort of, I think in many ways, and this is what Anna and I were talking about, how our, you know, it's depressing, because our perception of things is skewed by the fact that we spend so much time dealing with people who have a vested interest in promoting the wrong thing. But when you get beyond those people, when you get to normal people, when you get to people who don't have an investment, and where they're not invested in promoting the wrong thing, it is really remarkable how people pick up on this. I'm not saying that, you know, I have no idea whether, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with these students in terms of going vegan. As I said, we're about a third of the semester in, but I can tell you this, I've already had you know, a good chunk of them approach me and ask me for information about veganism. And mm-hmm. and you know, and this is just like, you know, we're basically, you know, in the later part of October. The semester started in the beginning of September. So, you know, we're as I say, you know, a little more than a third of the way in. And I've already got people who are saying, you know, who are making the connections themselves and are saying, you know, can you give me some information about veganism? Can you give me, can you help me find some recipes that I might, you know, I might try with my family? Things like that. They get it. They get it. They're not in any way irritated by, you know, the message which leads, you know, I mean, I haven't really talked about, I mean, I've told them that I'm a vegan and we're reading Introduction to Animal Rights right now, which is a book that I wrote in 2000. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, the whole idea of moral schizophrenia and, you know, how if animals matter, we have to stop treating them as resources. And, you know, and they're seeing the connections. So, you know, I mean, they're wanting to know about veganism.
I think one of the most exciting reactions that we get, and certainly Gary's describing it this year, is people who didn't come to the class as knowing necessarily much about the animal question, and certainly not being convinced of animal rights themselves, but to hear it presented with a clear message, and then to get in the reaction of the students of, well, this is really interesting, and listening to what you said, because I haven't heard it presented this way, I realize I don't have anything good to say to counter it. So I'm really going to have to think about this and possibly change the way I live. I mean, that's just remarkable to see that fast and clear reaction from people. When you see that penny drop, I mean, we talked about this so much, so many of the speakers did at the World Vegan Summit over the summer, encouraging people to speak and just to try it and to talk to people in their own communities, in their own setting, in their own voice, and to see what the reaction is. And it's easier and more productive than I think most people realize. So if there's a bottom line of today's comments, let it be, why don't we all go out there with new vigor and enthusiasm and really get the message out?
Yeah, you know, last week, Bob, Francis McCormick, whom I know you've had on the show before, Francis is a professor at the National University of Ireland at Galway, and she teaches, she's a medievalist. I don't know if she's ever discussed that on your show before, but she's a medievalist. She's actually she's a very interesting person in terms of her academic life, but she's teaching a course in animals and literature. I think it's called Animals and Literature this semester. And she was sharing with some of us the experiences she's having, the sort of epiphany sorts of experiences that her students are having in her class as well. And, you know, it really is exciting when you get beyond. I think in certain ways, one of the really sad things is because we are in the movement, as it were, we end up spending our time focused on a lot of these people who are promoting the wrong sorts of things, in part because, you know, they are out there criticizing the, you know, the abolitionist message. So we feel that we have to respond to them in many ways, or, you know, or to try to sort of educate around them. But in many ways, as you know, as I've said before on the show, you really have to sort of forget about them. They're distractions. They're part of the industry, as you've pointed out, and I pointed out, and Anna's pointed out, and other abolitionists have pointed out. They're part of the industry. They're part of what, you know, I saw an essay today. I don't know when it was written. I think it was a fairly recent thing, written by Peter Singer and Karen Dawn. And I think it was in the, are you familiar with the essay?
No, but I had a bit of a confrontation with Karen Dawn. Actually, when I spoke
at the animal rights conference long ago before I was banned and condemned. So it just reminded me of some of the issues we had and the body language when I was saying certain things, you know, about furnished battery cages that I think need to be heard sometime.
it was interesting because their essay was basically, well, you know, if you actually may do more harm than good if you give up beef, because if you end up eating more chicken and fish, you end up killing more animals. And so therefore, you have to try to reduce suffering. You know, this reduce suffering idea, which is basically and what really troubled me was at the end of the essay, they said, well, we understand that people aren't ready to go vegan. And I was thinking, you know, to hell with you, people aren't ready to go vegan. You don't want them to go vegan. You don't want them to be ready to go vegan. And that's the problem. The problem is the father of the animal movement, Peter Singer, says, we realize people aren't ready to go vegan. Well, to hell with that. People are ready to go vegan. They will embrace the idea. Some people won't. Many people won't. But some people will, many people will. And why aren't we talking to those people? And why is it that we have to deal constantly with these animal people who are promoting this negative message? You know, I come up with
so many gimmicks. I just find it so amazing how many gimmicks there are, from the cultured meat to cage-free eggs to now, you know, as you mentioned, it seems like we want to be species specific. And one of these days, as I mentioned, I do want to talk about what is that? It's called One Step for Animals, that says, you know, just stop eating chickens. So it seems like, you know, now it's I don't know. I'm sure the cows and pigs and fish would feel pretty bad about that campaign. But it just seems so gimmicky. You know what I mean? It's everything but, you know, what needs to be said and done.
Well, but remember, all of these people are benefiting in some way or another from not promoting veganism. So, you know, by promoting something short of veganism, they are benefiting in some way or another. And, you know, but it really is, it's appalling. And whether it's Mercy for Animals or One Step for Animals or whatever it is, it's all the same thing.
It used to be baby steps. At least it used to be plural with baby steps. Now it's only one step. You know, how much do we have to retreat on this? How about like the full jump, the full leap into it, the full joyous leap, you know?
Yeah, and instead of promoting veganism as something that is joyous and something that is a wonderful thing to do, a positive thing to do, something that'll make you feel better, not only physically but the thing is, if I say spiritually, then I got to deal with all these yo-yos who have to sort of say, well, but he's talking about religion. No, I'm not talking about religion, and I'm not talking about theism. I am talking about the fact that when the joy that you feel when you reject violence, that sort of violence in your life, and you get rid of it and you say no to it, and it's a wonderful moment in your life where you sort of renew your commitment to life, and you renew your commitment to justice, and you renew your commitment to what's good out there, rather than continuing to pander to the nastiness and the rottenness and the violence and the bullying and all of that sort of stuff. And so, you know, instead of portraying it as a positive thing, you have animal people who consistently portray veganism in negative ways and urge everybody not to promote veganism because it's harmful for animals.
Yeah, you're grumpy vegans, you're nasty vegans, you're angry vegans.
Hey, angry vegans. Yeah, you know, angry vegans. I just love that. Yeah, you know what I'm angry about? What I'm angry about is the complete perfidy and fraud of the animal movement. That's what I'm angry about.
And I also don't like that, you know, they're talking about purity, like there's something wrong with purity. You know, it's like, oh, be practical, moral, not pure. You know, it's like
moral consistency. It's not, we're not asking very much for most people. For most people, the transition is not that difficult. There are people in more pressed circumstances where every decision is difficult because of their circumstances. But for so many of us, a tweak in their lifestyle is not that difficult. And to think that only we special vegans are the people who understand the issue, or we special vegans are the ones who can do it because it's so hard and so difficult to be consistent, and people just don't have the intelligence and the fortitude and the moral force to do it, is insulting to everyone around us. This is an idea that is appealing if we only get out there.
And it's growing by leaps, and it's growing by leaps and bounds all over the world. People are going vegan.
There's nothing special about us. We did it. Other people can do it too.
And all these people, you know, whoever it is, you know, all of these people, whether it's One Step for Animals or Singer or any of these other people, they all focus on this nonsense, supposedly empirical research that is peddled by new welfareist organizations like Faunalytics and the Humane League Labs, or whatever. You know, basically this idea that if we, you know, that somehow empirical research tells us that if we want people to go vegan, we should tell them to do everything but go vegan. It is palpably absurd. The supposed research, as we've talked about in this program, is such incredibly bogus nonsense that it could be picked apart by a student, by a first-year college student who took a statistics course, could poke holes through it. I mean, it's just ridiculous in terms of, you know, the questions it asks and the populations it samples and the way that it samples them. It's appalling. It's absolutely appalling.
And the Humane League, you said, is one of those research firms, which you speak.
One of these pseudoscience endeavors is something called Humane League Labs, which is basically an arm of the Humane League.
The Humane League, of course, received $1 million to promote cage-free eggs. So I get concerned about bias when I hear something like that. You know,
well,
the Humane League received $1 million to promote cage-free eggs.
Bias. I mean, yes, Humane League Labs is basically the Humane League. You know, Faunalytics works very closely with these, you know, with all of these animal groups. And what they're doing is basically trying to legitimize, using supposedly empirical research to legitimize what these groups are doing. And the supposed research that they do is just so absolutely idiotic that it offends and insults idiocy, you know, to call it idiotic. Actually, it is just it's absurd. And
well, I have some really good anecdotal evidence, completely non-scientifically tested, purely personal anecdote. I find that vegan one-on-one education works. So instead of putting all this money into wasting time and keeping away, getting further and further away from the real issues, why don't we just take a leap of, not a leap of faith, but just take a bit of time and see if that anecdote works out in your life too. So if people want to go and try some vegan education, let's see if the anecdote plays out in their own experience. I find it works.
And the interesting thing is that these people who promote, you know, this idea that we shouldn't be promoting veganism because it doesn't work, and we should be promoting things other than veganism. They observe frequently, they say, well, you know, we've been trying to get people to go vegan and vegetarian for such a long time now, and it's not working. And the answer is, sorry, Charlie, we've never had a vegan movement. There's never been a sustained vegan movement ever in the history of humankind.
I'm almost embarrassed that I didn't notice it as I was going along all these years. It's like, I know, hey, where's the vegan movement, you know? And I have to say, all along, I was going to fur protests and circus protests and all. But where was the vegan movement? You know, I mean, yeah, where was it? I'm embarrassed. You know, I'm as embarrassed by that as staying what I thought was vegetarian all those years and having dairy and eggs, you know, which, wow, I wish I would have known sooner. I thought, well, you know, PETA has what, a vegan starter kit or PCRM or so, you know, now everything out there seems to be vegetarian starter kit or vegetarian or whatever. But had I known it was missing, I think I would have gotten involved with a vegan movement. Long before.
Well, that's what I find so bizarre, Bob. I mean, you're talking about the realization that so many people have when they've spent a bit of time with vegetarianism. Why didn't the light go on earlier? But then we're supposed to go out and send people down the very same path. So they have to flail around in vegetarianism until they finally, I don't know what, metamorphosis is supposed to happen, so vegans come out the other end. But why don't we try to give people the benefit of our experience?
Where was I when I needed me? You know, the future.
Yes, exactly.
Where was the future me?
But let's not repeat it. You know.
Yeah, and you know, people are these same folks, the reducitarian nonsense people. They're always saying, well, you know, you didn't start off as a vegan. And the answer is, damn right I didn't. And you know what? I wish I had somebody like me explaining it to me when I wasn't. And you know, it's you know, I was criticized because I was critical of it's a Vicky Horan. Vicky Moran, yes, Vicky Moran, Main Street Vegan. When she endorsed reducitarianism, and she said, you know, if only she had known about reducitarianism. It took her 13 years to go vegan. I mean, I know what she was doing in 13 years, but it took her 13 years to go vegan. And if only she knew about reducitarianism, she would have, you know, recognized that, you know, as she was going on her journey, she was actually doing something affirmative in terms of promoting reducitarianism and being a reducitarian. And which is another way of saying, gee, you know, if only I knew about, you know, about reducitarianism, I would have felt good about the fact that it took me 13 years, you know, to do the right thing. And, you know, and I had an exchange. I made some comments which made a lot of the quote animal people really angry. So they must have been good. They must have been on point. But the argument I was making is, Vicky, for God's sakes, what you're doing is you shouldn't be looking back on the 13 years that it took you to go vegan and say, well, you know, I wish I had had someone talking to me about reducitarianism during that time. If you're going to have any wishes, not that wishes are relevant in this context or anything but a use of time or a waste of time, rather. But, you know, wouldn't it be better to say, gee, I wish I had somebody who explained to me the moral imperative of veganism so that it didn't take me 13 years? I mean, this... I can't.
Well, isn't really so that was vegetarian for 13 years, you're saying, for her, right?
Which no, I don't know what I don't know. She said she talks about her 13 year journey to go vegan and how she wished,
I would think that would have been vegetarian for 13 years, because I think that's close to the amount of time that I was really in the dark. You know, I'm so embarrassed to admit this. Luckily, nobody's listening. But I think it was 13 years that I.
Well, you and Vicky Moran, you and Main Street Vegan.
It was 1971 that I went what I called vegetarian, and 1984 that I went vegan. So for 13 years, I was clueless about dairy and eggs. I mean, that's really.
But the great thing
I don't know.
Is that we have a clearer message out there and more access to get it to more people. So we don't have to leave the waters muddied by vegetarianism anymore.
The non-vegan vegetarian, in a sense, is reducitarian in that only pigs. You know, we're reducing the use of pigs, but other than that, cows and chickens continue to be used for their bodies and secretions. So, in a sense, vegetarian is reducitarian. You know, one species reduced out of the diet, basically, as I see it tonight. Don't quote me on this.
Well, I don't know. I mean, but it just seems to me that that we've got such an opportunity now. There are so many people really interested in this. And, you know, it's so predictable. Give me a group of non-animal people and I'll have a great conversation with them and I'll get them provoked and thinking about these things and I'll get them thinking about veganism. And even if they don't go vegan or they don't go vegan right away, I've got them thinking and they're provoked. They're focused on the issue. They're thinking about the issue. And I think in a lot of cases, they, you know, I mean, the experience that we have is we get, and I consider, you know, us very fortunate that we're in the position we're in, that we have a lot of contact with people in the public so that we get a lot of feedback from people. And the feedback we're getting constantly is, for example, from the Eat Like You Care book, the response to that book has been absolutely phenomenal. It came out in Turkish last week, and they're going to translate, the same publisher is talking to us about translating Animal Rights: The Abolitionist Approach, the book that we wrote in 2013. Was it last year? 2015. 2013 was Eat Like You Care. 2015, we did Animal Rights, The Abolitionist Approach. And that book, we've just got a French, a French publisher is going to be doing that in French. And we've got a publisher in Turkey, the same publisher who did Eat Like You Care, that is talking to us about that book in Turkish. So the abolitionist message is getting out there.
And they wanted materials in Turkish, and that's what we have materials on the website for people too, is... why they wanted to get the books out was because people are doing street one-on-one vegan advocacy in Turkey. It's fantastic. This is spreading very quickly. And it's people saying, wait a minute, I don't need a group. I don't need to wait to get the groups in line. I can do this myself.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what's as Anna mentioned a couple of minutes ago, we've got a great message. Why don't we just, you know, why don't we just, like, just for the heck of it, see how it works? You know, and the answer
there is nothing more positive when you really come down to it. If you,
but Bob, everybody,
after all of our complaining and everything, it is the most positive thing you can do. And so we're talking about the most positive action, really. After we're done complaining about everything, we're pretty happy that this is so positive.
And everybody who's doing vegan advocacy, and we've got people all over the place, you know, here in various countries in Europe, you know, in the Near East, we've had some communication recently with people in the Middle East, in terms of, you know, in Israel and in Egypt. So, you know, there are people all over the place who are doing creative, nonviolent vegan advocacy, and they're all having the same experience, that they're getting a very positive reaction from people. People are very interested. People come up to them. They come up to their tables. They talk with them. They take literature. They contact them, you know, with a follow. You know, they're given a follow up email address. They contact them with questions. They tell them, you know, a number of people come back to them, communicate with them, and say, we're going vegan. This is great. This is working. But yet we have to wallow in the mud with the animal people who are telling us, we can't do that. That promoting veganism is harmful. You know, you get people like Wayne Shun from DXE who says, you know, veganism is harmful for the animal rights movement. You have Matt Ball or Johnson D or whatever his name is, telling us that that veganism over at One Step Rambles, that veganism is not good for the animals. Well, I know we're going to talk about that on a future show. His comments that veganism is not helpful for animals or whatever he said. But, and this was a guy who was involved in vegan outreach and now works for Farm Sanctuary. Farm Sanctuary is not an abolitionist, far from it, an abolitionist organization. It's an organization that promotes happy exploitation. And so these people, unfortunately, we have to deal with these people because they are perceived wrongly as being part of the animal movement.
But the thing is that we no longer have to cede the platform to these people. If people want to be employed by the animal groups and have a position and a campaign and these little victories that they have to get to, That's we understand the industry side of it, but that isn't the only way that the message can get out. So if we can't clean that up, let's leave them to it. There are opportunities every single day to talk about veganism, to bring it into a conversation. It doesn't even have to be tabling. If people just don't feel comfortable right now doing that, there's all sorts of ways. I know Gary talks about this all the time, of weaving the vegan issue into your everyday life. So if you're at work and you don't feel that you can start, giving a presentation about veganism in your workspace, you sit in your lunchroom and someone says, "Oh, that looks good." And then you tell them, "Oh, yes, my sister went vegan and she gave me this great cookbook. And look, I haven't looked back." You know, there's all sorts of different ways of bringing it to be part of the conversation in a way that's welcoming to people, encouraging to people, exciting for people. There's all sorts of things that you can do. Gary always talks about, the checkout line conversations, the veterinary waiting room conversations, the making your airplane reservations and ordering the vegan food. You don't know how many times I've thought Gary's off doing something and I come back in and he's still talking about veganism. I'm amazed at what conversations can be brought around.
Yes, I mean,
to the vegan issue.
I'm making plane reservations. Anna comes
20
in.
Minutes later, right. He's still talking to the reservations person,
right,
about veganism. But that's a craft that you hone after 30 odd years. But there's so many opportunities. I don't care anymore what the groups are doing when it's disappointing and it's frustrating. But we all have a voice and we all interact with people all the time. I met so many great people with good ideas at the World Vegan Summit, Bob. It was fantastic to hear what people were doing.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing all sorts of stuff. And,
go and do that likewise.
Right. The difference is they're not running organizations and they're not out there with their hands out for donations so that they can, so that they can be careerist advocates. They're regular people who are out there educating people and they're doing a hell of a job and they're really creative and they're interesting. And as Anna said, we had so many wonderful dinners and lunches and breakfasts over at, what was the name of that restaurant? I even forgot what the name of it. Herbivore, yeah, in Berkeley.
Well, because Herbivore is now closed. You bought out all their food and they closed down.
Really?
Yeah. He had three restaurants, and I actually did want to give a shout out to Adham for 19 years of serving the Bay Area with Herbivore restaurants. At one point, he had three of them going, and then down to two, and then one. And now zero. He's closed them. So, yeah, that very restaurant, had we scheduled the World Vegan Summit and Expo a few weeks later, who knows where everybody would have been. You would have been buying all the bowls that I laid out money for in advance. That's what would have happened.
Well, there you go. But, I'm shocked. I'm shocked because that place was packed. Now a lot of it was packed with us, but nevertheless, it was
It did very well. It did very well over the years, and I know he just felt like it's so much work to run a restaurant. With personnel
hard.
And and he had vegan restaurants for 19 years at Ham. So really nice guy, and really owed a debt of appreciation for what he did for the community here.
Well, what was happening was during the summit when we were going down there, we would go down, four or five or six of us would go down there. And then people would follow us down and they would come in and they'd say, can we talk to you about this idea or that idea? And it was just wonderful to sort of meet all of these people, because the World Vegan Summit was a positive event. It was an event which was focused on vegan advocacy and figuring out clever ways to do vegan advocacy, rather than being a fundraising effort where people are going to the public saying, please support our humane happy exploitation programs.
And you have such different conversations. I think it's really important for people to think about this, because I find it, I think they will too. You have such different conversations when you're not asking for someone for money.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are situations where people need charitable donations for things. I understand the role of that. But when we're just talking about advocacy, if nobody is asking for donations, there's no reason for people to recoil. There's no defensiveness that comes into the conversation. We should be asking, what can we do to help you? How can we encourage you? How can we give you the benefit of our experience? How can we make it easier? Not give us something. You have a very different conversation with that when you're going with an attitude.
Except for donating to Go Vegan Radio. That's the one asterisk I have to put there. I'm trying to pay for this stuff. And I don't like asking for money, so I don't do it. And then I watch everybody ask for money everywhere. You know, so I'm a nonprofit and I hate asking for money. That's not good. You know, it's like I watch Democracy Now. Send us money. Send us money. Then, what, a week or two ago, I get a tweet from HSUS that we saved 130 animals. Send emergency donations now.
Oh.
They have $200 million in the bank. They can spay and neuter every dog and cat in America. And here I am. It's like, I don't want to ask for money. I don't want to. But, you know, I have a World Vegan Summit and Expo to put together and the show and expenses. So, I just want people to realize when I'm not asking for money, I'm actually asking for money. I want them to think that, like, when they see me or that, you know, it's like, oh, he probably wants to ask for money now, but he doesn't like to. Let's think that, right? I don't know.
Obviously, if you're trying to put a roof over the head of a meeting, you need money. If you need to plug your computers in and to do presentations, there needs to be some fundraising for that. Obviously, I'm talking about just the sort of tabling one-on-one interaction.
Yeah,
it's a different
you don't need. You're right. You don't need to be soliciting donations when you're doing you can do advocacy soliciting donations. Yes, if you're going to have a radio program and you're going to need equipment and you need an engineer and that sort of stuff, yes, of course, then, you know, you're going to have, but we're talking about, you know, when I'm talking about the problem of fundraising, I'm talking about these organizations which have large staffs of careerist advocates who are promoting animal welfare in single issue campaigns, and basically, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not only not helping helping animals, but indeed they're counterproductive. That's what we're talking about. But the bottom line is, Bob, putting aside, you know, people who have to, you know, buy microphones and equipment and, you know, and hire engineers to do radio shows, the people who aren't, you know, the people who just want to do advocacy don't need to be soliciting donations. You know, anybody can do advocacy. It doesn't require money. It really doesn't require money. You know, one of the things that, you know, that I spend a lot of my time doing is sort of figuring out, as Anna said before, about, you know, how can I weave this into my day-to-day life? I look at every exchange I have with somebody and I say, how the hell do I bring up veganism in this situation? And I mean every single one.
You know, I'm kind of that way too. I thought I was supposed to keep that a secret, but that is a compulsion that I have. I'm talking about being vegan all the time, everywhere,
trying
to figure out.
To everybody. I mean, you know, I mean, she's not kidding. When I make a plane reservation and I say I have a special meal requirement, you know, I want a vegan meal.
Like, here we go.
And then I figure out, you know, and generally I have to tell you, when I say, you know, I want a vegan meal, the person will often say, well, you know, that you, so basically you want, you know, you want a vegetable option. I said, well, no, not, let's be clear. I don't want any dairy at all. I don't want any eggs, no cream, no butter. And I really, you know, I'm very, very strict about this. I don't want any animal products in there. And then I'll say something like, you know, it's been this way for 35 years and, you know, and I'm really serious about it. When you say that, something like that, that will almost always instigate a conversation. Someone will say, gee, you know, 35 years you've been doing it. Yeah, 35 years I've been doing it. And then you get into a discussion. But, you know, my view is, you know, yesterday I was at a Mom's Organics, which is a grocery store that we have that allows me to avoid Whole Foods. It does sell animal products, but it's not as proud about it as proud and pompous about it as Whole Foods is promoting the various.
That's El Cerrito Natural Market for me.
Okay. So this is Mom's Organics, and so yesterday I was there and I got a couple of quarts, or not quarts, but I guess quarts of the So Delicious soy, you know, the soy ice. Is it So Delicious?
I think so.
I think it's so Delicious. Mm-hmm.
Probably coconut ice cream. It's So Delicious.
No. Well, they do have coconut, but I got the soy. And so I got several of them, and the guy said, "Oh, you like this stuff?" And I said, "Yep." And I said, "I said actually, I love the stuff," and I said, "I could live on the stuff." And I said, "And you know, when I became a vegan 35 years ago, the only thing that was around, and it was something called Ice Bean. Do you remember Ice? Well, you probably don't remember Ice Bean.
I do. I remember Ice Bean, and I liked it a lot, actually.
It was horrible.
Oh, I liked Ice Bean. Do you remember Soy Maj, the cheese, Soy Maj?
Yes.
That was horrible. Now, that was horrible.
I was saying to this kid 35 years ago, you know, it was like, you know, you couldn't get any of this sort of stuff. And the stuff that was specifically vegan was horrible. If you like Ice Bean, I didn't. I thought it was horrible. And
a lot of this was wishful thinking at the time. I wanted to like things. I bought Saimaj every 6 months, hoping that it improved, and it never did, you know. So
yeah,
it's like,
but I
was hopeful, you know. I wanted to like it, you know.
Yeah, and so you know, you know, but now, you know, so I got involved in a discussion with him. He said, "You've been a vegan for 35 years," and I said, "Yeah, I've been a vegan for 35 years." And, you know, and times have really changed. It's really so easy now. But you know, I got into a discussion with him. So I mean, my view is like every single conversation I have with every single exchange I have with somebody, my goal is to sort of figure out, how do I work veganism into this? And
with
you know what?
With
I
you end, that. I end it's a hobby of mine also.
I end up, you know, fairly successful at sort of figuring out how to bring it up. And I always get, you know, I now carry Vonda Kadas, who was one of the people, one of the folks who, the abolitionists who spoke at the World Vegan Summit. She brought 1,000 pens. I don't know if you got any. Did you get any of the goat?
I got one or two. I think I got one, actually.
Okay. The goat, you know, with our website, howdoigovegan.com. Well, I got several hundred of them, and I carry a pocket of them. I have a bunch of them in my pocket all the time. I hand them out. I give them to people. Well, as soon as somebody indicates any interest whatsoever in veganism, they get a pen. And I say, here, you know, here's the website. Go to the website, and the website will answer all your questions and give you recipes and talk to you about, point you in the direction about where you get information about nutrition and the moral issues and all the issues that are involved. People love it. They're really positive. They respond positively about it. So, you know, so I will end with the thought that we started on, which is, you know, this is an exciting time. Yes, we're facing one of the most peculiar elections that we've ever faced. But As far as veganism is concerned.
But that could be interesting for talk radio. So
exactly.
I have to try to be selfish and think, well, in any case, I'm going to have four interesting years of subject matter.
Exactly.
Actually, this is really bringing to a head what you would, your comments were. A point that I feel very strongly is that we're at the point of despair when we think about what's happening with the national government and what's going to happen no matter who wins the forthcoming election. But we can't change foreign policy individually. We can't change monetary policy. We can't change so many things. This is something we can do. This is something that has a real impact that we have control over, and it's something that most of us have the choice to do. And I find that that's a kind of exhilarating thought, that over this I can change. Over this I have control. This, I can put my imprint here on this aspect of my life. I think that's important.
Right. Definitely. It's the action that we can do today. We don't have to depend upon government or politicians or corporations. It's the peace action we can do today, the action for animals, the environmental, the health. It's everything, you know. I mean, we can do it today without, we don't need carbon taxes, and we don't need HSUS to give us a bacon coupon.
Right.
That's exactly right. You know, we don't need a larger organization. We need anything but the will to do the right thing. That's all we got to do.
And everybody is so against Wall Street. I keep saying, you know, you're eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. That's the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction right there. So, you know, if you're so against Wall Street, you know, if you're upset with Hillary and Wall Street, go vegan. That'll show them, you know. So
exactly. So,
okay. I guess that's about it. It's time to take Daisy for a walk, apparently.
Go take Daisy for a walk. We'll see you next week, Bob.
We will talk on Sunday. Thanks for being with us. And thanks to everyone for listening. And please, if you haven't done so yet, like right this minute, is a great time to go vegan. Okay. Thanks for listening.